Blog Talk Radio.
Flash it. New thing. This is the song. Got two lyrics. Very simple and plain. We can all sing together. No ads to feel left out. Join in. This is a song that people need to be singing right about now. When they're telling you that you can't, you shouldn't, you won't.
Once again, to another great day that the Lord has made. We're going to get all this stuff out of the way, do what we're going to do. We're going to continue part two of this speech that was given by Minister Minister Louis Farrakhan at the U.S. Berkeley. Part two of this, and I will not keep it up. We can do what we always do. So we can get started. So you can find me on Facebook, George.Mango904. You can find me at Twitter, signoff.com. You can signoffforums.com. You can also call in after I finish playing the second half of the show. 347-989-1014. I'm going to skip Ephesians 6 tonight, and we'll just jump right into it. Okay, guys? Lot to talk about. So we're going to go ahead and do it.
I said, I could give it to you right now, but let's go upstairs and have some coffee. I figured my answer would go down easier. went upstairs, I said, you said that I have my truth and you have yours. I said, there's only truth. You might have one perception, I might have another. And it's reconciling of two different perceptions of truth that makes people come together in unity. But not on your truth or my truth. It's just truth.
Right.
I said, Isaiah the prophet, I went into the Torah, he said, equity cannot enter and justice stands afar off because truth has fallen in the streets. We're going to have to agree on what is truth. And then reconcile our perceptions of truth so we can come together, blacks and Jews. Does that sound intelligent?
Yes,
sir. I said, now, I want to be your friend. That's why I'm here. I said, but you asked me to condemn the book. I said, yes, sir. I'll condemn it in the morning. Because I want nothing attached to my name that is not truth. So since we quoted Jewish scholars, Jewish rabbis, Jewish historians, you get up in the morning and condemn everyone we quoted as a liar, then I'll condemn the book. Discussion finished on that point. Third point. Anybody that's not a friend of the Jewish community was never written of well in history. That's true. Because they're the publishers. They're the writers. So if you want to be well spoken of, then be a lackey. Be a flunky. Be a tool in the oppression of your people, and they'll always speak well of you. But if you want to stand up and be rejected, be despised, be evil spoken of, be plotted against, then that's the role of any man or woman who would stand up for truth in a world built on lies. I told him, I want to be your friend. But if being your friend means I've got to deny the truth, then yours is a friendship I don't need, and yours is a friendship that I don't want. Wait, I said, now, you can come against me with all you got. Listen to me. I said, and since you have a lot of influence on the government, you can bring the government against me too. I said, but as long as I stand on truth and stand with God, I will be the winner. Now listen. It was on after that.
Oh, yes, sir.
Now, back to the point where I was. Where was that point? Thank you. Getting up in age, you know. Yeah, it ain't gonna leave me. But look, only two people in an audience of 800 students. How many of you are in fields of engineering? Stand, please, brother. Would you stand, please? No, wait, no more? Wait, wait. Oh. civil engineering, mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, all forms of engineering gives you a upward role in nation building. So all your engineering students, now I see three sisters, one brother over here, a sister in the back, a brother, and four more brothers. And where? And another brother. Where? I'm sorry. Sister? I'm sorry. Yes. Thank you. Now look at this. These are engineers. They have a future building a world. How many of you in agriculture? Please be seated, engineers. Thank you. How many in agriculture? How many? Three.
Four.
How many of you have respect for farmers? Did you know that agriculture is the engine of national life? Agriculture. And to disrespect the farmer and the farm is what is putting the people in the terrible health condition that the people are in. You are allowing somebody else to create your food, and they're killing you wholesale by what you're putting in your mouth. So if you don't want agriculture, engineering, math, how many in biology? Oh, we're coming up now. How many in physics? How many in chemistry? How many in medicine? How many in law? I see we got a future up in here. Wait a minute. How many are going to be teachers? Okay. All those that are going to be teachers, you stand. Got a walking mic.
This is cordless.
Oh, good. All my teachers. Let me ask you a question. Well, I went to a teacher's college too. Are we still studying Dewey? I didn't hear nothing. Freud? Jung? You're going to have to get some new psychology. Because that mess that they're teaching you now, you can't use that with the new minds that are being produced out there. Teachers. The children outthink the teachers. You say, well, this is attention deficit disorder. You can't control the classroom. What happened? Why can't you control the classroom? Their minds are too fast. Now, if you think that there's an attention deficit disorder. Watch them in front of the computer with their games. See how quick their fingers move. And mother can leave the baby in front of the computer and go shop. And come back and the baby's still there. Working the game. But try and teach them this milquetoast pap that you call education. They puke up on you. You can't grab your children, excuse me, with this archaic knowledge. As a teacher, if you're not creative, you won't hold their minds. So today now, let's dope the children. Mother, your child is just exceedingly active. It's just disturbing my class. So little Ritalin will help. Forcing your child to be a junkie at 2 and 3 years old because as a teacher you can't cope with the quickness of their minds. You cannot use the old way of teaching to teach the new students. Now, all you professors, let me just talk to you now. You've got to be creative in that classroom. You want to prepare these students to match the requirement of the time. And if you are not educating them properly, these are going to go out and fail as teachers because we didn't adequately for the job that is at hand. Now, I'd like to maybe end this with something about agriculture, Genesis, and building for the future. How many of you are theological students? Not one. One? Where? Oh, okay. Now, my teacher and my student in theology, I don't know what you're learning. But I know this. Real theology has to deal with the question of life itself. Do you remember Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount when he said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God"? When is a poor person in spirit blessed? And what did Jesus mean, poor in spirit? Can I have a few more minutes? Spirit is the energy of life. And you can tell when a person is filled with the energy of life because they're involved in the business activity of life. And the business activity of life is providing food, clothing, shelter, education, employment for yourself and your people. Now, what did Jesus mean? Foxes have holes. Birds have nests. But the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. That's a terrible condition to be in. You're less than a fox. A fox knows how to dig a hole. And a bird knows how to build a nest. But the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. That's you. If they don't provide for us, we're lost. How can you say you're equal to somebody who's doing this for themselves and their people, and you're not doing it for yourself and your people, but you want to be treated as an equal? I know it's painful. It is. But we feel like we should be equal, shouldn't we? But you will never be treated as an equal if you're not doing for yourself what other people are doing for themselves. That means that the burden of proving that we're equal is not on somebody else. That burden is on our shoulders. So we, as students, have to accept that responsibility to make yourself the equal by doing what other people have done and continue to do to prove and justify their existence on God's planet. Have you ever seen Big Bird? You know Big Bird? Sesame Street. Have you ever seen a bird, yellow bird like Big Bird, look into a black bird to get it a worm? Standing in a line? Any bird lines? Any worm lines? Any free lines? No creature looking to another to do for it. How silly do we look as the greatest of God's creation, the human being, standing in line. Can I get a handout? You got any food stamps? Well, Mr. Romney said, you know, he's not worried about the poor because there was a safety net, and if something happened, then we could fix it. They don't care anything about the poor. Blessed are the poor in spirit, because soon they're going to inhabit the kingdom of God. Because it is God's will and pleasure to give it to those who have been deprived of a real human condition. And there are those who want to keep us dependent. And that we refuse to be. So, my dear and beloved brothers and sisters, this is an election year. And our poor brother Barack, I feel very sorry for him. Because he's given America the best that he could. He's not an economist. He's a constitutional lawyer who became the president of the United States because the majority of American people, black and brown and white, Jews and Gentiles and Asians and Hispanics, voted for him because he came in on the theme of a change that we could believe in. The people so wanted real change. And the minute he got into office, he knew that America had to be humble enough to apologize for past mistakes. You say, well, Mr. Romney said, why should we apologize? See, these are arrogant people. They'll never be successful. They're too arrogant. But His Holiness the Pope, Pope John Paul, apologized to the indigenous people of the world for what the church had done to them. And if the Pope could apologize, and win the hearts of indigenous people for that apology. But when Barack Obama said, let's make a new beginning with the Arab and Muslim world, let's make a new beginning with Africa and other countries and nations that we have misused. It was Romney who said, look at him, apologizing. He's playing to the arrogance of the white constituents of America who find it difficult to recognize that they've been wrong. You won't even apologize for slavery. We can hardly get white people in America to admit that the wrong that was done to us was so destructive of us that we need repair. And they are not willing to see black people repaired from the psychological and mental damage that 400 years of living under your rule has done to us. Was Jesus white? Was Jesus white? Well, if I'm taking a little long, I don't mean to exhaust you. But beloved brothers and sisters, you want a torch that's lit, because the one that we had in the 60s has gone out and been destroyed. Was Jesus white? Why do I even raise the question? Wouldn't make any difference if he were. We can accept Jesus as a white person because his message came from God. But evidently, some white people who knew that Jesus was not white had to make him white to deprive you of the greatest human being. That he was your brother. So if you knew that he was one of you, then you would think better of yourself. How come we don't know that it was a black man who gave us the cell phone? That was the answer right on time. How come you don't know, we don't know, that the Statue of Liberty originally was black? What? Do you know that the French were honoring the blacks that fought for America's freedom? And so the original Statue of Liberty had a black face and chains at the feet that were broken because blacks fought to give America her independence from England. Why don't we know? Because things that would give you the dignity of self-worth were taken from us so that you would always think that they found you in Africa with bones in your noses swinging up and down trees. And they always love to tie us to chimpanzees or gorillas. You got to get my speech of February 26th. The way they depicted Obama and his wife. Why don't you white people in genetics tell the black people that we are your father and your mother? Can you handle that? Why don't you teach them that life did not begin in Europe? It all began in Africa. Why don't you teach them that the first wonder of this world is not something that Jewish people built when they were enslaved in Egypt? Otherwise, they would know how it was done. That's why it's called the first wonder. Because they wonder how it was done. And in case you wondered who did it, they put a sphinx out there with a black face on it. Napoleon was so upset. Look at that nose. Look at that nose. He trained his cannon on the nose and blew it off. Because that negroid nose is a giveaway. You're a very great people. But you got to know yourself in order to accept the responsibility and duty imposed on yourself with self-knowledge. You are the first in the light of the sun. Out of you came every race. You didn't hear me. Why don't they teach you this?
Well, civilization began in Greece and then Roman civilization. And, of course, Egypt was first, but that was a white civilization, too. Yeah.
No. We're not just the father of civilization. We're the father of science and mathematics and engineering of every field. We're the father of real medicine. We're the father of law. Then start over there in Europe. Go check out Hammurabi. Oh, why didn't they tell me this? Because they want you to worship them. And as long as they become the model, you will never rise above them. This is what you call an education of white supremacy. So when you come out of it, you come out bowing to them. But when you get real education will absolutely free you from their control. So I wish I had more time. But I want you to get a lecture that I delivered on the 26th of February. Some scholars and scientists have said it's the most powerful lecture that Farrakhan has ever given. God, I wish we had it so I could give it away to all of you young giants. But I want you to think on what you heard today. And I'd like to close this lecture with a word to the Jewish students. Please listen. I don't fault any Jewish person for loving Israel. But I would fault you if the leaders in Israel are going in a wrong direction that could produce a conflagration in the Middle East that will spill over into that war that is to end all wars, called in the Bible the War of Armageddon. I would appeal to the Jewish students to think about your love for Israel and be wise in helping somebody like Netanyahu, who many feel is off course, in trying to provoke a war with Iran. Do you know that there are American generals who advise against war with Iran? And here there are 32 senators under the guidance of Mr. Lieberman and Mr. Cantor and the gentleman that ran against President Obama, Mr. McCain. All of them are the hawks that want to lead America to war. They can't find $3 trillion to cut from the American budget. But they are ready now to push for war with Iran, and there's no money to fund a war. You that are students of economics, America has no future if her gross domestic product is less than her debt. America's GDP is $15 trillion. America's debt is climbing by $350 billion a day. She's well over $15 trillion in debt. But to find money for another war, and you young people will be asked to go fight? Fight for what? Do you think Iran is any real threat to Israel? I want you to think. Israel has 300 nukes. I think Israel is second only to America. She may have, or Russia. Maybe she's third. She never signed the non-proliferation treaty, and Israel allows no inspection of her nuclear capabilities. You know why she's upset that maybe we need bunker-busting bombs? Because under the earth in Dimona, Israel, they secretly built nuclear weapons. Would let nobody in. And a whistleblower told on Israel's nuclear capability. Israel has the power to destroy the whole Middle East by herself with her nuclear capability. So for America's Congress to be goaded into war, and Israel pulling America into another war, I'm urging President Obama to tell Israel, not now. If you love the American people, you will not allow them to die for the foolishness of Netanyahu. Why do I call it foolishness? Iran will never attack Israel. Even though she's being provoked to attack, our Islam says we are never to be the aggressor. Fight with those who fight with you. America, Israel is assassinating scientists in Iran. The Congress is allocating millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to destabilize Iran to bring about regime change. This is your America, a troublemaker, a mischief maker, meddling in the internal affairs of other nations. They're destroying your future. So I said, I will never advise young black or white, Jewish or Gentile, Americans to go to war and spend the lifeblood of Americans for Israeli aggression. I'm asking all Americans to become conscientious objectors. Tell them, send yourself over. Damn it, you want war? Barack, you go fight. And bring Panetta and the generals, and y'all go over there and take care of that. Leave these young people alone and allow them to have a future. And if nobody will speak for you, Farrakhan will. There is no price big enough to pay that you will have a future. And your future is in your ability to create it for yourself. Thank you for listening. Assalamu alaikum.
We have time for one or two questions.
Hello, everybody. Thank you, Mr. Darrell. Appreciate it. I had my mic on mute. I just wanted to get all that audio out of the way. Like I said last night, I know the stigmatism on people who are really radical. Louis Farrakhan has been accused of killing Malcolm X. He has been accused of being an anti-Semite. He's been accused of racial injustice towards white people. I have let you listen to Louis Farrakhan for yourself. There is no mystique behind it. There wasn't somebody else speaking for him. He was speaking at a university with Jewish people in the audience, with Caucasian people in the audience, with black people in the audience. He had a variety of students, people, colleagues, or enemies, for a better word, in the audience, filming him, listening to him, making news from it. didn't say anything in this speech that would bring a white person to say, I don't like Louis Farrakhan because he don't like white people. He didn't say nothing about that. He talked about one point that I totally agree with that he said. He said several points that I love what he said. But he said, why are we looking to the white race as the model? We are the model. The birth of life is known to be given. Then why are we still thinking that we can't deal with truth? Another thing he said was this. We have to understand where we have been in order to be at a position in order to make ourselves stronger. I'm talking about us. I'm talking about as a race, as a community. Because the Band-Aid has never fully been put on racism. Now, I'm reading W.E. Du Bois' book right now, The Souls of Black Folk. And this book, it's kind of profound. It's hard to explain it unless you're black. And if you're not black, you've never been in a struggle, you don't really understand it. I'm sorry if you don't understand it, but every community has something that they've been through, okay? And in the African-American community, we have been dissected, literally. We have been torn apart mentally, and physically we have been breded to be trophy horses for the plantation. All right, we've got a caller. Hello, caller. Can you say your name and where you're from, please, sir?
My name is Daryl. I'm from Kroll, Texas.
Hello. How you doing, Mr. Daryl?
I'm doing fine, and I enjoy your program tonight. It is very edifying. And Farrakhan was right about one thing. We must get the word out. The people must hear, especially in our public schools, about all of the advances in this society, in this civilization, in the world, created by people who are black. And it's a shame and disgrace that educational systems do not recognize, do not hear, and will not teach this. It's despicable.
I would agree. I think we talk about education. I mean, one of the things that he said is that we are a nation of we are a civilization of regurgitators. So in order for us to be scholars or to be educated, we have to be able to regurgitate stuff we've already heard. Or
right.
regurgitate what's on a, you know, for a test. And are we really learning these facts? I mean, are we really using critical thinking skills in order to say what's right or wrong? We don't learn those skills until we go to college. And so what exactly are we teaching our children? I mean,
we're teaching them racism is what we are teaching them. We're teaching them ignorance and illiteracy as to the true nature of the development of culture and civilization.
Right, and I totally agree, because when I grew up, I mean, I can only think about what I grew up and what we were learning. I thought the civilization came out of Greece. It was either Greece or Rome. I didn't even know. But I knew that, you know, it wasn't until later, as I started doing my own research in school where I didn't even know Africa was in, and I'm black. So,
yeah.
You know, for me to understand who I am as a black person, children are not understanding who they are as a person unless they get their cultural awareness from their homes. And even in their homes, getting that cultural awareness, because it's not okay to be whatever culture you are. You have to be mainstream in order to fit in. And I think that's a disservice to the America. Now, this is what I say. I say that America by itself has no culture, none whatsoever. It is a piece of land that was taken over by people who are indigenous people who have lived here. If you take away Africans, you take away the Irish, you take away the Polish, you take away the Italians, you take away the Sicilians, you take all those people away, and if you have English people or people who are from a Caucasian background, what exactly are they bringing? They're not really bringing anything to the table.
Correct.
I mean, because they said that they built civilizations. Well, they did, but they had somebody else do it for them.
They had a broad basis upon which to build, and that basis came out of Egypt and other African and Northern African nations.
But do you know that the United States Census Bureau says that the northern part of Africa is considered to be Caucasian?
Well, it's not. They're people of color. It's part of Africa.
I know.
That's why
I said,
it's called North Africa.
I say the same thing. But according to the United States Census Bureau, if an Egyptian or a person from Morocco comes to the United States and they declare citizenship, they can consider themselves to be white. So if a person from South Africa comes and declares themselves to be American, then they have to consider themselves to be African or black.
Right.
Which really doesn't make any sense, but that was the piece where Minister Louis Farrakhan was talking about knowing your history and knowing making the connection between Jesus being white or black. Now, me personally, like you said, it doesn't matter if Jesus is white or black. It does, because we know God transcends through all colors.
Right.
But when it comes to the identification of Jesus, have you seen the Bible, the story on the History Channel, the Bible?
No, sir.
Okay, I hadn't either, and I caught a couple episodes this weekend, and he was I guess it was Jewish origin, I guess, I don't know. He looked Jewish, but he was very fair skinned, and then everybody around the actors or the sub actors, they all were dark Jewish people. So my question would be, if you're going to cast the extras to be dark-skinned Jewish people, why not make Jesus dark-skinned Jewish? Now, we have no idea what Jesus looks like, but the Bible specifically says when he comes back in physical form that he will have, you know, feet of bronze and woolly hair. So I'm only going off of that scripture with Revelations and also Daniel and Isaiah, but I'm trying to understand why it is not okay for people of Caucasian people to be afraid if Jesus is black or dark skinned. Let's just not even say he's black. Let's just say he's dark skinned.
Right.
Well,
if you go into Walmart during Christmas time and you see all of the nativity scenes, what do you see? you see blonde-haired, blue-eyed baby Jesus in a manger. And that is so unscriptural, that is so not historically correct. Baby Jesus in the scripture and adult Jesus growing up was not blonde-haired and blue-eyed.
And you're correct. But the fantasy is that he is. So I guess my question would be is when we bring up the race of God, or the race, we bring up the color of Jesus, why is it so upsetting to white people?
Well, I can just say one thing. As a white person, it is not upsetting to me, because Jesus is a rainbow color. He is he's a mixture of all people, because he created all people. And he created all people in his image. And just like you said, from the book of Revelation and from Prophet Daniel, he's coming back, like you said, woolly-haired and darker-skinned, bronze feet. So why Caucasians cannot understand this is beyond me. It's pure racism that's been inbred into the Caucasian people from day one. You go also down the aisles in Walmart or any other store during Christmas time, most of the babies for kids, what are they? They're light-skinned, they're blonde-haired, and they're blue-eyed. How does that make... I have no idea how that makes young black kids feel when they see all of the dolls and the G.I. Joes looking like the Anglos. Makes no sense to me.
Right. I can try to say some things. I can tell you how it made me feel. It made me feel that me as a black person was insignificant. And people may say that's not true. Well, until you walk a day in another person's racial skin, you won't ever understand the psychological, the only thing I can think of is bastardly ways of thinking, because we always, they always talk about black Irish. And all a black Irish person is a person with dark hair rather than red. And so we call them the black sheep of the family. Well, they would call them black sheep of the family. And so if we look at, and we use that analogy, the black race is the black sheep of the American race. We were given respect, even when we were given the Emancipation Proclamation. We were never given respect at all. And so when the blacks tried to liberate themselves and become Americans, and all we wanted to do was Americans, it was a free fall on killing black people. Now,
yep.
How can America not address that? How can people say we can't? That was back then. We're living right now. We are still. When I say we, I should say the human race is still. We are still being hurt by those actions, because not only are the Africans being put through the ringer, but the Mexicans now are being put through the ringer, and the Native Americans, but also all foreign people that come to our country. And we view them as people who want stuff from the government. We don't want anything from the government. What the government needs to do, only my opinion is what the government needs to do is to be able to create jobs, equality, and freedoms that will justify across the board everybody being able to live a comfortable life.
True. But only we, and I mean all peoples need to take the wire cutters and cut the barbed wire separating the different groups and all join together and be one.
Right, right, right. Do you have any suggestions? I mean, do you have...
Well, yes, I have a wonderful suggestion, and you are doing it right now. Your show is a grassroots effort in educating the people. And there needs to be more shows in every community, in every rural area, just like your show, educating people. Why your board is not lit up right now is beyond me. There should be 100 people lined up waiting to give you a call with their opinions. And I don't know why they're not.
Well,
I mean, if you have one white boy out here in West Texas who agrees with you, think about the scores of other white people who may be listening, who are shaking their heads saying, yes, yes, bring these shows on. Let it sound throughout the world. We have a really great medium right now, and it's called the Internet, and it's called Blog Talk. And you're going to see this in generations to come, more and more shows like yourself. You are a pioneer in starting this in this racist area we live in. You are doing a fine job. And people from 20 years from now will look back and raise your name and say, yes, this man had the gumption, this man had the strength and courage to sound out and to help educate people of all races, of all classes. You know, one of the big, and you hit on this several times, and so did Farrakhan. It's not just color, although that is a major part. It is the classism. It's those that have keeping down those who have not. As long as they can keep down those who have not, they are going to win.
Right.
Well, not on our watch, my friend.
That's right. Not on our watch. No, sir. Not on our watch. And, you know, I thank you for your kind words, but you know, we only know that it's only through the grace of God that we are allowed to do these kind of things. Because there will come a time where we won't be able to talk as freely as about Jesus as we are now. There's going to come a time. And so it's time that we have now in order to stand up for Jesus. Because if we continue to be silent, I totally agree. I think my board should be lit up. I think I should have 300 listeners listening in the chat room. But it is not so. And another thing is, and I also applaud you for this, Mr. Daniel, Daryl, is because what I put on my thing is, we listen to mainstream media all the time. Now, whether we believe them to be true or not, we do take them to be true. You mention a word like Louis Farrakhan, and people are immediately turned off because of the nature of whom he is. Nobody that I've known that I talk to who actually listened to Louis Farrakhan's speeches could say they look at him differently. Now, if they will actually take time and listen to, if they tell us that Rush Limbaugh has something important to say, then black people will listen to Rush Limbaugh. They don't like him, but they'll listen to his point of view. Why? Because we need to understand his point of view and his followers and what they're thinking inside of that. Inside of their head. Because if you don't know the opponent's debate strategy or your opponent's ideology, you have no ground in trying to come together to have an understanding of both sides. You don't have to agree on every issue. But there is a point where you have to come together and say, you know what? We are both human. We both have two eyes. We both have one nose. We both bleed when we cut. We both can get cancer. You know, and so there is a lot of common ground. And then another point that you said was very phenomenal, and that is classism. You cannot, as a human being, understand racism if you don't understand classism. Because
that's right, my friend.
It kind of goes parallel, but it's kind of fickle. Because you could be a rich black person and still be prejudiced to black people, towards black people. And you can still be a rich black person and still be prejudiced to a white person, or vice versa. Now, when we talk about racism itself, it cuts through classism like a knife. Because regardless of how much money you have, you're still going to be inferior to the white supremacy, period. And so,
sure.
When you're talking about classism, like I've said before, the veil is this. If the middle, this is why politicians always talk about the middle class. If the middle class disappears, then the veil is released and people will find out that the top 1% make all the decisions, that the government are flunkies of the corporations, and we are rats in a race trying to achieve what we can never have. So when we do get to that point where we have a little money in our pockets, we can say, instead of looking up high in the sky, we're now looking down. And so, excuse me, but I don't want that person. Oh, he's just a doorman. He can't come to this party. I mean, really? Come on. Okay, because once before, you were a door person. But now all of a sudden, you've got your foot through the door, and you can wear pearls and diamond necklaces and all this stuff. Listen, I think classism it fits right on side of racism, and that is an issue all by itself we need to extinguish. Now, Jesus said when he was alive, there will always be poor, but blessed are the meek.
Sure.
So, and that the poor will inherit the kingdom of God. So, my thing to my listeners today, tonight, is to re-listen to the first half of the speech that I played yesterday, re-listen to the speech that we did tonight. Think about what we're talking about, okay, because it's one thing. First of all, the reason why Louis Farrakhan was asked to go to UC Berkeley was because the African students of this group asked him to come and give a speech.
Mm-hmm.
They were told to uninvite Louis Farrakhan because it would make the university look bad because he is a Muslim. He is an African. He's the leader of the Nation of Islam, which say that they don't like Jewish people. And apparently, the Jewish coalition, I guess, on the campus wanted to fight that. Now, as I've known America to be America, and what I've known universities to be, it is supposed to be the hub of free thought, free speech, free ideas are flowing. So to deny the university access to this individual based on his past or what he thought, but they thought they knew who he was. Oh, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody has said something that made somebody mad. We've
right.
got family members that make us mad that we don't even talk to.
Right.
But we don't discredit them because they're our family. But the point being this is when they asked him to come, he came.
Yes, he did.
What they wanted to do was, this is how I feel about Louis Farrakhan. I don't know much about Louis Farrakhan in the past because I was not raised back then when the movement was going on and the suspecting of him killing Malcolm X. I've still got my own theories about that, but I'm not going to talk about that today. What I will talk about is, like I said, everybody's made the mistakes in the past. He is speaking to the youth from his past history in order to give us an idea of what they went through. For my generation, who has no idea what the civil rights movement was, my children
right.
do not know the struggles of blacks and whites and of every race who went through the civil rights movement in order to give us these rights that we have now. We did not experience that. We get brushes and phases of racism, but I've never been sick. A dog has never been sicked on me because I so happened to look at a white woman, or I sat at a table. I mean, it went to a diner because it was all white.
Right.
Never experienced that. But if I've never experienced it, and I'm only 3 to 4 generations removed from slavery, my children have no idea. They have no idea what I'm talking about.
Correct.
Can you kind of explain, because you're an older gentleman, can you kind of explain how you grew up in that era? You don't have to tell any personal stories, just the things that you saw that was kind of, you know.
I can tell
several
personal stories. First of all, I came from a very progressive liberal family who did not see color. I was raised that way. I did not have any white friends until I started the first grade. And that's where I lived, and that's where I was grown up. But I can remember in 1964 when my school integrated, I can remember the first day, and I was a young grade schooler, that in the assembly yard outside of the high school, the poor black high school students were beat up by white people simply because of the shade of their skin. I remember that, and that made a strong impression upon me. What made a strong impression upon me also, as I was growing up, were the words of Dr. Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy and several others, Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, Julian Bond. I remember those people. I did not know them, of course, but I would see them on TV, and I just asked my parents why this madness was going on, and they had no explanation. But like I said, I may not be the one to answer this question because I was not raised in a family like that. We did not walk through with the same shoes the black people did, of course. And you'd made a statement, unless you walk in with the color of my skin, you're not going to know. Well, I can never know what it would have been like had I been black and to have been part of the first generations to go through integration. I would have no idea. I just wonder if I would have been strong enough to put up with what I saw those poor black kids going through.
Wonder
if I would have been strong enough.
Wow, that's very profound. I mean, because that's very profound, because you said, would you have enough courage, enough strength? I mean, for you to say that, I can only imagine what your feelings were when you saw that. A lot of people would say, I mean, come on, let's be realistic. I mean, that was a time where you're not going to just jump up and defend somebody you don't even really know. Now, I mean, people did it, yeah, but you said, would you have had the courage? And that's something that is very profound, and the reason why it's profound is because people nowadays don't understand how much courage, how much strength, how much forbearing, the fruits of the Spirit, these young children had to have in order to endure the beatings, the spittings, the name-calling, the hurt, the rock-throwing. It was probably endless. And so my generation and below, they don't understand that. I mean, can you, like, I mean, you just have me, man. You almost have me crying in a minute. I'm about to cry when I get off the radio station, basically. Because I could just only imagine you sitting there. Now, when they integrated, were they in your class? I mean,
There were two young black men in my class when
okay.
I was like in the fourth grade.
Okay. So you were in the fourth grade. Wow. That's really young. I mean, my daughter, she's in the fifth grade right now. So, I can't even fathom that. Really, I mean, did it affect your schoolwork?
Well, it certainly affected my radicalism. I mean, here I am in my mid-50s. You wouldn't expect a middle-aged white man to be calling in on a black show about sounding off and listening to Louis Farrakhan, would you?
No, that's very
that
true.
That probably blows you away more than anything.
I'm just glad that God's opened up your heart enough so you can feel, I mean, can understand it. Because, I mean, by what you said, I mean, it's very, like I said, it's very profound because God touched your heart enough where it opened your eyes, where saying that, you know, this is who you're going to be. And like you said, it's people like you that make this show what it is, because the more we grow together, the better chance we can do, better chance we can make a difference and make a change in our location and our grassroots. Because if we don't, we're here talking about, you know, the government's this and the government's that. We can do that all day, but what are we doing to help the people right now? You said another thing right now. You said that the county of Wichita Falls are still going through this period of racist endeavors, and I hear this all the time. Now, I have a child in the school system, but because my child is white, they don't see me until I pick up my child, and so then it brings a whole different dynamic because the kids are saying, hey, that's not your dad. He's black.
Right.
And then my daughter's like, yeah, this is my dad. And she's trying to explain to other 10-year-olds how I'm her dad. So it's one of those things where, you know, can we move on past race, or are we going to always be stuck in this rut that, you know, the traditional family is a traditional family, and my family is very blended. With my children, we're very blended. And when you look at my son, he's German and he also is Norwegian. And he has Mexican in him, and he looks just like a white kid. But if you put his cousin next to him, you know, he looks Mexican. So
yes.
It's just very, I don't know, it's I don't know, you've got my head a spinning, Mr. Darrell. I can only imagine you sitting there in your class and having these black kids in your class, and how did the teacher react? Was he tolerant, or was she tolerant, or how was it?
The school system was totally intolerant.
Okay.
They did not even know why they had to have black kids in the school. And this was in the mid-60s. This was in the early 60s, 64. The concept of integration in West Texas was like sinful. You're supposed to keep the races separate because in their minds, that's how they read the Bible. And so it was the way God divided it up. I got in trouble at church maybe 15 years ago. I go to a predominantly white church, and we were hiring a youth minister. And he was married, if you could have only seen him, he was as blonde-haired as you can imagine, blue-eyed as you can imagine, skin white as milk, and he was married to a very dark woman, very black woman. And those of us on the committee, we called him to be our youth pastor. Well, all HELL broke out. There was a church meeting called, and basically, even though my group was the one given the responsibility by our congregation to select the youth minister, they overdid it.
Wow.
They overturned it.
Wow.
And we lost several white families because of that. We lost several mixed families because there were Anglo people married to Hispanics, and they felt left out. They saw this as a slap in their face by their church. And
what do you mean by
so
that?
It,
what do you mean?
That if you can deny the pulpit to a white man because he's married to a black woman, then how is a congregation seeing a white woman married to a Spanish man?
Right.
They felt discriminated against because of race.
Wow. Wow. I mean, this is why I love the show. Because it is people, it is regular people with plethora of memories from their past. Everybody's got a different past. But you sharing that story will cut through so much layers of people's feelings, we won't even know. And because that by itself, I mean, because the white woman was married to a Hispanic man, correct?
That is correct.
And they left the church because they felt like they would have been discriminated if he wanted to climb up in the ranks of the church.
That is correct. And plus, they were very offended that this young couple who were called to the church, and since she was black, the congregation, you know, raised a stink and said, no, we're not going to have this mixed race couple being our youth pastor. And their response was, we're going to lose all of our white kids to the Baptist church. See, we're United Methodist. My wife and I are. And United Methodist, as you may know, the real United Methodists, we're colorblind. And we don't look at feminism that way. We've had female pastors since 1770. So a real Methodist, it's a slap in the face when you discriminate against somebody because of their gender or because of their race.
Wow. That is, oh, man. That is so profound. So they did not mind that the white woman was married to the Mexican man, but they mind that the white man was married to a darker-skinned black woman.
Yes, sir.
That's just weird to me, but I understand it because I understand it. I just put it that way. I understand it. Wow, that's
Racism comes in all fashions and shades, and and you'd already mentioned about the Black Irish and different ethnic groups. Well, they were not slapped down like the black people were, but they were sure slapped down in many different ways. You know, the signs in restaurants said, no Irish are allowed in, back in Boston when all the Irish immigrants were moving there.
Okay.
You know, I mean, there are lesser shades of white.
Right.
And a lot of times it's based upon which part of Europe your family came from. I know it's just like, I'm Czech. And I know that my aunt telling me that when she was riding the school bus, this Anglo woman said, why don't you people go back where you come from? So, and they all looked alike. You know, the the kid that said that to my aunt who looked just like her. Why don't you people go back where you come from? Well, it's by your show addressing these issues, you don't know what good you are doing out there. And I hope that there's a whole bunch of listeners out there who will take your show to heart and give you support. And one of these days soon, I'm going to see your board, your chat room board, lit up with 300 callers trying to get in 30 seconds worth of their opinions. That's just, I'm going to stand on that and I'm going to claim it. That you're going to open the eyes of all these people because you are a groundbreaker and your show is a groundbreaking medium. And I'll let you go because I've dominated this conversation. But I just want to let you know, from my perspective, you're doing a world of good. And I thank you for playing Farrakhan. I thank you for allowing open discussion. And I look forward to hearing you more. Now, you can explain something to me now, brother.
Okay.
I do not know all the time when you are on. So if you would let me know when you are on, or if you tell your listeners, like me, who don't always know when your show's on, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. I made a decision this weekend that I'm going to be on Monday through Friday. That way I can spend more time with my family on the weekends. So it'll be Monday through Friday from 7 from 10 to 12, unless I change it. Yep.
Well, whenever I can, I'm going to listen, sir. Now, I have to tell you, I have to get up early and go to work in the morning, so I'm going to let you go and listen to the chat room a little bit more. But I hope when I get back in the house, because I had to come outside, I hope your chat room is lit up.
Well, you've already claimed it in the name of Jesus, so it's gonna be so. And I will continue to pray. And I thank you. I thank the Lord for you. You are a blessing. And like you said before, and I keep that in my heart, that even to the end, almost to the brink of death, you have to have faith. And I will never forget that because it's so important. And I thank God that He allowed you to continue to be alive enough to give me encouragement on my show. And I really thank you from the bottom of my heart.
And I thank you, and I tell you what, one of these days we're going to shake hands because we're going to meet at one of Antoine's readings one of these days.
Yes, sir.
When I can make it. And so we'll have a face-to-face conversation during that day.
Sounds great to me.
Okay, sir.
All right.
Thanks for listening to me.
Welcome. Thank you for calling in. It was a great conversation.
Thank you, sir, very much. I agree.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
All right, y'all. God works in such a mysterious way. And I thank Him always because Mr. Darrell came on the show, and not only did he share an intimate story about when he grew up in the fourth grade and immigration hit his city. He had two young black children in his classroom, and they were surrounded in torture, period. Hey, listen, he said he would not have known if he would have even had the courage or the strength to endure that. Now, I thank God for my listeners because you guys are great. Let's step out of our comfort zone, okay? Because it's easy to praise God when your life is going great. But when you are in the lion's den, when you are in the midst of the devil and he is bearing down on you, and when you have lost everlasting hope that God would send some angel to protect you, He comes and saves the day. For those who will listen, let's step out of our comfort zone, okay? Because I have lived the white side. I have. I know what it is. I know what it means to not like black people. I know what it is to say that, you know, oh my goodness, look at these black people, they're acting like that. I mean, I've been there. Mr. Farrakhan, Honorable Minister Farrakhan says that in order for us to understand who we are trying to be equal to somebody who says, okay, you're fine, you can be, we are waiting for approval. What are we waiting for approval for? I'm a human being. I am first a child of God. God has already given me a blessing to be equal. See, when Jesus came and he came and he died on the cross, he broke the covenant of the Mosaic law, period. From that point on, God has given authority to all saints who believe in him. So why are we still walking around looking for approval from people who won't give us approval anyway? Everybody wants approval. God, since they're young, they want approval. Who do we have to go to get justification that we are who we are? Okay? So you black people go to these historical black colleges, and you become Kappa, Alpha, whatever y'all call these days, I don't know, all right? And you find yourself to be put in a position where you can go and be an entrepreneur and make money. That's fine. If you wanna do that, that's cool. All I'm saying is this. You use those connections and you turn your community into a thriving community. I'm not talking about the suburbs, because that's everybody's goal, is to move to the suburbs. Fine, move to the suburbs. But remember, there are children in the ghetto right now who are trying to make it. Mr. Dale also talked about classism. We got that bad in the black community. It's not about what you know, it's who you know. Forget classism. You're not going to get, you are no better than anybody, because at the end of the day, you're still a nigga, period. Yeah, you got a good position, you're walking around, and you, everybody's patting you on the back, what such a great guy you are and all that stuff. But the minute you say you listen to Louis Farrakhan, I bet you they will change they tune on you. Why? Because he is viewed as a radical extremist who don't like white people. What? Come on. Why are you still kissing butt? You are a human being. You have the right to choose who you listen to. But if you want to play the game, then you're not going to shake the tree. You're going to get along. You're going to play along to get along. You want that promotion. You want that reputation. You want that invite to go to these balls and all that stuff so you can go rub elbows and make yourself think you're important, because that is important to you. Fine. If that's what it is, you want to feel important that way, there's nothing I can do about it. Who cares? But in the same breath, I will tell you, find your community. Find something to give back to the community. I'm not only talking about your money. I am talking about your time. I am not only talking about you. I am talking about your children. I'm not only talking about you. I am talking about your family. How about y'all go and do something together in a community? Now, I'll say this. Not everybody is willing to do philanthropy work. Got it. But it's important that we remember who we are. Because if we give up what and are, it is going to be a shame, because our young children will not know how to identify themselves. I'm dark skinned. I'm dark. That's fine. I am not worried, not one bit. I currently enjoy who I am now, because I have found myself through Christ Jesus. He has allowed me to understand who I am and what I am and what creature I have been designed to be. He has explained to me or allowed me to have wisdom to understand my spiritual gifts. Now, do I know how to use them fully right now? No. But when it's time, God will give me the opportunity in order to use those things. There's a certain time and a certain place for everything. Now, I'm going to speak to my white brothers and sisters. For my white brothers and sisters, it is very simple. You cannot continue to have a life as business as usual. And this is why. You talk about you have never done anything to the black race in order for black people to be mad at you. But your generation has never addressed racism, period. Your generation has never said to the blacks of my generation, listen, sorry. I'm not talking about just, you know, a small apology. I'm talking about a full-out scale. If you're my age, if you are 35 years old, in the next 20 years, we will be running the country. Next 20 years. So, I mean, because you think about 30, 45 to be in the Senate, about in the House of Representatives, about 45, 50 to be in the Senate, and let me start over. About 45, 30 to 45 to be in the House, and then about 50, 60 to be in the Senate. Now, we will be running this country. My peers will be running this country in the next 20 to 30 years. So when we talk about apologies, when we start talking about nation building, growing, listen, we have to be at these tables. Okay? You Caucasian people have to be at these tables saying, we will not let another 20 to 30 years go by and we are in the same state that we were in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. We can't go back. We talk about the future and what the future holds, and we talk about technology. Listen, let's get our social structure right. Because you are riding on the fruits of the labors of the black folk who are allowed to be put down. And you say, well, why do we got to do it? I mean, black people are making money now. There's rappers, blah, blah, blah. Listen, we know that that's a tool. That's a ploy to get black people off of the real level, okay? Now, that's another subject for another day. I don't want to get onto it right now because I'm trying to give you an idea of how we can come about giving some dialogue and some change. Okay, because in the next 20 to 30 years, those same people who have fought for us during the 60s will be gone. They will be incapacitated. They will not be able to still fight for us. So who will stand and fight? My generation must be strong. We must not back down. We must show the American people, we will not take it anymore. We don't want just justice. We don't want just freedom. We don't want just equality. We want what the Constitution said it is. And if we don't do it, our babies are doomed. Now, I'm getting really riled up right now, and it's because I think about these things. Because our Martin Luther Kings are gone. Our Malcolm X's are gone. Our Mega Everts are gone. You see? Our radicalists are gone. Who do we have? Who all the radicals, they have either belittled, they have ostracized and put them in a category, or there is none. Why? Because we are passive people. We let the government, we let public opinion of us hinder who we are. And if you're radical, they will say everything about you. But as long as you are standing for God Almighty, listen, you could be as radical as you want. And you know what? It's time for me to be radical. I'm telling you, I am filled with the ghost right now because it's time for me to be Peter right now. It's time for me to be Peter. It is time for our generation to get a Martin Luther King. It is time for our generation to have a Malcolm X. It is time for our generation to have a Louis Farrakhan. It is time for our generation to have a Black Panther Party. Because the party system we have does not stand for America. It stands for the corporations. And if you think I'm lying, that's why we're going through the recession that we're going through right now, because we want people to be over the left or to the right. We need to stand for humanity. We need to stand on Jesus. Now, am I talking about getting violent? No, I'm not talking about getting violent. I am talking about standing for justice. You tell me in the next 30 years, if we're still talking about jobs, if we're still talking about liberty, we're still talking about equality, then where have we gone? See, listen, W.E. Du Bois. He says, a people thus handicapped ought not be asked to race with the world, but rather allowed to give all its time and thought to its own social problems. But at last, while sociology gleefully count, has bastards and his prostitutes and very souls of the toiling, sweating black men in the darkness by the shadows of the vast displaced, men called the shadow prejudice and learnedly explained it to be the national defense of culture against barbarism, learning against ignorance, purity against crime, the highest against the lowest race, to which the Negro cries amen and swears that to so much of its struggle or strange prejudice as it is found on just the homesteads of civilization, culture, righteousness, and progress. He humbly bows and meekly does the acceptance before the nameless prejudice that leaps beyond all this. He stands helpless, dismay, well need speechless before the persons who disrespect and mockery and the ridiculous systematic humility and distorture of the fact. W.E. Du Bois. Our souls are crying out for help. People are crying out for help. And listen, I understand that my listeners are intelligent people. Right now, I'm not talking about intelligence right now. I'm just talking about having a freaking heart. I'm talking about having feelings to not think about yourself. To think about others who are struggling. Mr. Dale said he wouldn't have known if he would even have the courage or the strength to go through segregation as a child. He was not on the receiving end. He only saw it from his perception. What are our children thinking about us? We cannot let our babies continuously to be afraid of our society. We as adults must protect our babies. They are the future. If you want them to grow up to be white, then that's fine. But at least teach them how to be black first. You ain't got to be all militant and go through Kwanzaa and all that stuff. I'm not asking you to do that. But what I am asking you to get them to understand where medicine comes from. Where civilization started. It didn't start in Greece with Socrates and Plato. They were playing with little boys. So was the Romans. They went to Africa and got all that knowledge. Yeah, we use those philosophers and all that stuff, but that's hogwash. We need to know who we are as black people. Accept your skin. I mean, I'm sorry for screaming, and I'm very passionate right now. Very passionate. The reason why I'm passionate is because I love to the core of who I am. That's how Jesus made me. I'm not going to apologize for that. That's how God made me. We have got to stand. The days of us saying we're going to put that and we're going to wait, okay? If we continue to wait, tomorrow will never come. Why put off tomorrow what we can put on today? Our people need healing. We got our children confused. Afraid to accept their blackness because they've got to fit in a cookie-cutter white world. Shame on you, black people. Shame on you. I had to grow up thinking that I had to be white to be accepted. Shame on you. Shame on you, black people, for allowing my generation to see that you didn't stand. Why? Because you want to be passive and say, well, let's not talk about the past. No, let's talk about the past. Let's be real about it. If a Jewish person can roll up their sleeves and show you their damn numbers that when they was in the concentration camp, well, guess what? I will let you see my beautiful black skin and say, this was made by you. You brought me here. We asking them to fix us. We asking them to fix our school systems. What are they doing? They're closing the schools down. And you know what they're closing, right? They're closing down the poor black Mexican schools. Then they're going to bust them into white schools. Now, is that segregation or what? What is it? So we can balance the budget? No. We've got priorities wrong. Okay, let me ask you this. Okay, since y'all got these PhDs and the master's degrees and all this stuff, if you're doing a budget for your house and you do not take care of your house and your car, how are you going to get to work and where you going to live? If you tell the children, we don't have enough money to keep the school open, so we're going to send you to another school. Now you've created another paradox to make the children think that they need to go to a new school in order to get better education. See, Louis Farrakhan said another thing that was right. We are drugging our babies right now. We're teaching our babies to be drug addicts at such a young age. So when they get off, whether you black, white, Mexican, don't matter, they're drugging all kids. You know why? Because when we grew up, they put asbestos in our house. They put lead in everything. They messed up our foods. And they started cloning those animals and putting hormones in them. And those diseases are so prevalent now because we were definitely being agents of our society. How many of y'all grew up with lead in painted houses? How many of y'all grew up with asbestos in your house? Huh? Everybody know about genetics. It don't take much for a generational change. And it's all biological now. You see what I'm saying? It's all biology. So once that gets into your DNA, that DNA will change on you. And they have engineered it now to make it even worse. Now, you can believe me if you don't want to, but you best pray. You best pray to God that I'm wrong. You best pray to God that they take those drugs away from your child because the child got ADHD and all this. Just listen. Teachers are not being taught how to teach. They're being fed information so they can regurgitate it to these babies. And so when they get to these jobs, they're no longer using the skills that they learned in college. They've got to go in what they have, what they call survival mode. That's what I call it. Because they have to go and make sure that these babies pass these tests. These babies are being tested to death. Just so statistically, people can keep track of how many Hispanics are doing this. How many blacks are doing this? What are the Caucasians doing this? So what if your child scores high on the scholastic test? Don't mean they smarter than my babies. Now, we don't want our babies to come home with F's and D's and all that stuff. We don't want that, no. Because we assume that our children are smarter than that. But when my baby, 10 years old, she's doing geometry right now. I didn't learn geometry until I was at least in the 10th grade. Yeah, we learned about shapes, but I'm talking about my baby actually doing geometry. So what they're doing is now they have condensed so much information. These babies are not really containing or maintaining understanding. They're just going through the flow. You know how it was as a child. Shoot, every week is something different. If you got it, you got it. If you didn't, you didn't. And then next year, the following year, they'll, hey, I know you learned this. And then, you know, but hey. Now, for the next 3 days, it's going to get really good for the next 3 days, okay? Because we're going to talk about the black agenda. Now, I will explain it right now because I've got a couple minutes left, and then I'm going to get off the air. But there are these things that these black leaders get together and they sit and they talk about these issues. And one of the questions was brought up: Does Black America need an agenda? Now we all know agendas can be used for all kinds of things. I mean, when you talk about an agenda. Now, we're not talking about overthrowing the government, or we're not talking about. We are simply saying, what as black, in the black community, what can we do to better ourselves? And if we take this black agenda and we do what we can do in our communities, ground roots, when we take our case to the president, Will they be willing to hear it? My name is George Beverly. This is the Sign Off Farms. Thank you for listening. See you tomorrow night, because it is, I'm telling you, it's going to be on and popping. So.
Flash it. New thing. This is the song. Got two lyrics. Very simple and plain. We can all sing together. No ads to feel left out. Join in. This is a song that people need to be singing right about now. When they're telling you that you can't, you shouldn't, you won't. Tell them this, tell them this, tell them
this. No matter what.
Beautiful thing, and it's the truth.